from deep in the heart of Texas, please welcome Josh Reeves.
All right, here we go, folks. Welcome to episode number 9 of the Reality Report with me, your host, Josh Reeves, right here exclusively on Rumble. Hope you all are doing well out there. I got a lot of stuff I need to tell you about and talk about before we get into questions and stuff on this episode. I have, what is today? August 11th. So yeah, I mean, just in the first 11 days of August, I've already released I did that Josh Watches the Irishman, and actually that one is just the first of 3 new ones where I watched the movie The Irishman and give you my commentary and analysis on it. That was at the request of Angel, listener. And I've since then now done Josh Watches The Men Who Stare at Goats, which is more, you know, MKUltra, CIA-related stuff. That's on sale in the download store now. It's only $10. Get one. And by the time you're listening to this, the third, I didn't intend for this to be a trilogy, but really this is a Josh Watches trilogy. So The Irishman, The Men Who Stare at Goats, and then by the time you're listening to this, the third one will be on sale, which is Josh Watches The Good Shepherd. Yeah. So 3 new Josh Watches. Part 1 of my Bill Cooper Mystery Babylon series audiobook video series I'm doing. I'm reading the transcripts from Bill Cooper's radio broadcasts that comprise his Mystery Babylon series. And I'm doing an audio-video presentation out of it, meaning it's me reading the transcription, and then you have visuals, video, that accompany it, to accompany what I'm reading. And so that's out. 3 Josh Watches, the first part of the Bill Cooper Mystery Babylon series. That's out. That's on sale in the download store. And 3 movies. I just have 2 this week. It's 11 days in August, guys. Last show I told you about the film I just put out called The Queen's Bedroom. We did the questions for that last week. And since then I've put out what is now the 8th installment of the Spellcaster series. It's called Spellcaster's Addendum, The Dirty Tricks Department. This is not a cutting room floor thing, guys. This is not, you know, leftover garbage or anything. This is just a further demonstration to you of why I didn't put out any films from 2017 or 18 till 2022. Well, 17 I put out Soulcasters 1.5, so technically I did put some out that year, but 2018 and 2000. From 2018 until I put out Spellcaster 2 and 3 in 2022. I didn't put out any films because that's how balls deep I was and how much research I did. People, and I took so much shit during that time because people were claiming like I wasn't really gonna make those films. I mean, you know, I had every kind of accusation leveled against me, and I could never demonstrate to people, you guys have fucking no idea what the fuck you're talking about. You have no idea how much information and research I'm swimming in, and I'm trying to reconcile all of it to make it into some sort of digestible thing in the form of a film. So I didn't get to put out any, you know, everything was so focused on that series, all of my research time, all of my filmmaking time, everything was so ensconced in that project for so long. That even though I've made 7 films, well, Spellcasters 5 came out in January of this year, but I also put out Spellcasters 1.5 and Fall the Movie, F-A-U-L, Fall the Movie about the fake Paul McCartney and all that, and how the fact that Paul McCartney didn't actually die, but was replaced in the original Paul, went to formed another band and became another successful pop star under a different identity and stuff. But that was the 7th installment. So the 8th installment now of the Spellcaster series is the addendum, the Dirty Tricks Department. It gets into all the nasty shit. In addition to MK Ultra, which is mostly what the Spellcaster series is about, it gets into all the other nasty shit that the CIA's been up to and all that. So, yeah, man. Definitely get a copy of Spellcaster's Addendum. Especially into the CIA thing. And all these Josh watches that I've been doing go right hand in hand with that and with the MKUltra stuff and the CIA stuff. Yeah, these are all important pieces of work you should get. And I need you to get downloads whenever you can right now. So, I put out Spellcaster's Addendum this week. And then, guess what? I had another film in the can. I was saving it because I was like, well, it comes down to the wire on the operating costs, and of course it did. I'll have this to put out, you know. But it's only been out for a couple of days, so we haven't sold any copies yet because I don't think anybody really knows about it yet. The Dirty Tricks Department. My 20th film on the year, 40th film overall. It's on sale now in the download store. Please get a copy. Listen, real quick. I've got a question from Tony. Tony, we'll get to your question here in just a bit. Got one from Tony, one from Calvin tonight. So we'll get to you guys' questions here in just a bit. I just need to get through some other stuff first, and then we'll get to it. But I don't know what the fuck to say, to be honest with you. Yeah, imagine that, huh? Me at a loss for words, yeah. All I can say is thank you. All I can do is express my gratitude to Tony Q. If it wasn't for this guy, I'm not exaggerating this, guys. I'm not overstating this. This is the honest to God, real, actual truth. If it had not been for the fact that Tony is the greatest supporter and listener of my work of all time, probably that there ever will be, and the fact that this guy busted his fucking ass on Friday to make sure that I didn't die because I was about to die. I was about to lose everything. Tony, I owe you everything, dude. I owe you my life, man. I'm not even equipped to even know how you repay that kind of debt. You know? Really? When you owe someone your life, how do you ever pay that back? I just have to look at it like, well, you know, I've saved other people's lives, so, you know, the universe responded and sent Tony to save my life to, you know, give me one back. I heard from a guy whose life I saved not long ago. Yeah. I hadn't thought about it in a long time until you brought it up. It was back in the 9/11 Truth days. We used to have our weekly 9/11 Truth meetings at this restaurant. And, yeah, one of the guys was choking to death on a piece of chicken fried steak. I just stood up, calmly walked behind him, employed the Heimlich maneuver, which I'm trained in, and, pow, it shot out. I just calmly walked back down to my seat and sat down and, you know, I didn't even act like it was that big of a deal. I just kind of acted like, okay, we got to keep this thing moving, you know, let's go. We can't have somebody die in the middle of this shit. We're on the clock here, let's go. You know what I mean? I'm a hustler, y'all. I'm a worker, man. I fucking hustle. I was like, it was even on my body then. I was like, look, we can't have this motherfucker die in the middle of our shit, too. This is important. So I fucking, you know. But anyway, he contacted me a little while ago and was like, hey, man, I never forgot, you know, you saved my life. And I could feel it and see it in my head. I was seconds from going out. And you saved me, man. You saved my life. So, you know, yeah, I mean, I saved lives, but Tony absolutely saved mine. And not just in terms of this work and what I do, but in terms of me, myself as a human being and a person. It's not an exaggeration. I literally would have been dead. I would not be here right now. And, you know, Tony's just a stand-up guy, and just a great human in general, and, you know, I don't even know what to say, because everything doesn't do it justice. Just saying to you doesn't really feel like it does justice to me for what I owe this guy, you know? You're a stand-up guy, Tony, and, you know, stood up and saved my life. You know, that's interesting, that phrase, stand-up guy. That, you know, that everybody uses that, and I don't think anybody really knows where it comes from. It comes from the mafia, guys. We think of it as stand-up guy means, oh, you're just a good guy and you do what's right. Well, that's, yeah, I mean, you could say it does. But in the mafia parlance and, you know, mafioso speak, it means a stand-up guy is someone who gets pinched, goes to jail, doesn't rat on his friends, does his time, gets out, comes back to the life, and, you know, no, he didn't rat on anybody, he didn't snitch anybody out, he's not a stoolie. That meant you were a stand-up guy. But then it got co-opted, like all phrases and slangs and stuff do. And it's kind of lost its meaning where people just think it means just a stand-up guy just means, oh, you're just, you know, you're a good guy who does the right thing or whatever. And yeah, I mean, yeah, it does mean that. But that's not what it originally meant. Originally, if you were a stand-up guy and you were asked to stand up and or you stood up, it meant that you went to jail or prison or whatever and you didn't snitch on anybody. And that's what made you a stand-up guy. So I don't know. I don't know why I brought that up. I just I'm very much into that research area. So I think it's interesting and stuff like that. But in whatever definition you want to use, Tony definitely is that. It's heavy, man. It's just not, I know it's not as heavy for any of you as it is for me, but it's heavy for me because I experienced it and I lived it. I could tell you, but only a shadow of a doubt, I'd be dead right now if it wasn't for him. All I can tell you is, Tony, look the fuck out, dude. Because you got some fucking good mojo coming your way. at some point. I'd start buying lottery tickets if I were you. Betting on going to the track, betting on fucking MMA fights, whatever, which I can help you out there if you ever need some picks, let me know. Something good's coming your way, Tony. Something big. Something to the point where you're going to go, what the fuck? You're going to go, how the fuck did that happen? I don't know how. I don't know when. I can't tell you those kind of details. All I know is something life-changing is coming your way where you're going to go, what the fuck? How the fuck did that happen? It's going to be so unexpected, you're not going to know. Yeah. I've seen it happen, Tony. It's going to happen to you. I've talked about it on my other show. I don't like talking about that much because it's so fucking weird. It sounds weird to even hear myself talk about it. I don't know what it is. A lot of people just chalk it up to, and they just say, oh, well, that's just karma, and they leave it at that. And I go, well, yeah, I mean, you know, we could say that, and maybe it is that, but I think it's more than that. I don't think it's just that. But everybody who's ever significantly done me wrong in my life later has had bad shit happen to them. And everybody who's tried to help me along the way in my life, things have never done anything to intentionally harm me or anything, and even inaction, you know, can qualify as that. Those people all had amazing turnarounds in life and stuff happened for them. Yeah. I know. I don't know. I'm not even going to try to guess, venture a guess at what that is. I don't know. I can't explain it. All I can tell you is that time and again, I've seen it go both ways. I've seen people who fucked me over and didn't have my best interests at heart have crazy, wild stuff happen to them in their lives, and I've seen people who've done their best to try and help me have amazing things happen. I don't know. All I can tell you is, bro, start buying lottery tickets. You got something coming your way, man. It's going to be market. I promise you. I want you to remember I said this because I promise you it's coming. I don't know how. I don't know when. I don't have those kind of details. All I know is that for sure something life-changing in a positive way is coming your way, Tony. I mean, I'm telling you, man, I've just seen it too many times. And I've seen it way too many times with people doing me wrong. So my... just, again, it's only the 11th of August. I put out three films, three Josh Watches, and the first part of the Bill Cooper Mystery Babylon audio-video presentation. All that's in the download store. Please buy copies because I got to eat, guys. I had to spend every penny I could scrape, including what Tony contributed to just, you know, not go under, not be on the street, save my studio, save my equipment and everything. So we're running on below fumes right now. And, just everybody that listens to this, buy, you know, go buy one of the new downloads that I put out this week. Everybody, that's your mission between, you know, say now and tomorrow, whenever you're listening to this. Just go buy one download from my downloads. Buy one of the new Joshua Watches, buy one of the new films. The newest, the 40th film, my 20th of the year, is called The Great Reset. It's one of the longer films I've put out this year because I don't make super long films anymore. I find it better to make shorter, concise films. But this one I had to go all in on and make it long because there's certain things that needed to be in it. It's called The Great Reset. You know, I was late to the party on The Great Reset stuff. Someone asked me about it a few years ago, and I had only seen or heard about it from, like, you know, far-right, hardcore, you know, conspiracy-type people. So I thought it was another, at first I thought it was just another one of these new made up conspiracies. There's a lot of people trying to do that now. Tartarian stuff and all that, you know. There's people that are just making up conspiracies now because they want to have something that they can act like they're the progenitors of, or they're like the starters of, because all the old ones have been taken. So when I first heard about the Great Reset, that's what I thought it was. Because, and I was like, why not? And then I looked at the dates. Oh, and I found out why. I was fighting for my, all the Great Reset stuff, Klaus Schwab and World Economic Forum and all that stuff, that all came out in June 2020. I was fighting for my life in the intensive care unit of Parkland Hospital when all of that Klaus Schwab Great Reset stuff came out. So I was late to the boat on it. I missed it. And I looked at that and I went, you know, huh. Makes you wonder, doesn't it? It did. I mean, you know, it did for a second. It made me go, huh. If I was a conspiratorial-minded person, and of course I'm not, I might float the idea that quite possibly that was an assassination attempt against me, because they just happened to drop what I think is some of the most groundbreaking, important, scary stuff ever while I was fighting for my life and wasn't in front of my computer where I could, because I was down for like a month or 2 months after that happened. So just to bring you, refresh you if you don't know what happened. So back in March 2020, this is 2 days before the lockdowns, COVID lockdowns started. Coronavirus lockdowns, they weren't even calling it COVID yet. But 2 days before the lockdown started. And, you know, even then I wasn't a person that went out that much. But I had a friend at the time that I was trying to get into watching the UFC. And so we went to the restaurant, Twin Peaks. It's kind of like, I don't know, a more bougie version of Hooters, you know, Twin Peaks. Bitch with big knocks as your waitress and stuff. So we went to, it was the night that Weili Zhang fought Joanna Jędrzejczyk, which is like the greatest women's MMA fight of all time, hands down. And, you know, I was trying to get my friend in to watch it. And he was one of the best fights ever, men or women. Definitely the best women's, but one of the best fights just in general ever. Just a knockdown. They just murdered each other for 5 rounds. And I had my Nate Diaz. I'm Diaz Army all the way. I had my Nate Diaz walkout hoodie on. So everybody was coming up to me that night. And you got to remember, at this time, we were just starting to hear about coronavirus. The lockdowns hadn't happened yet. It wasn't called COVID yet, which is, you know. So everybody was still going out and stuff. So this is like 2 days before St. Patrick's Day. And so we're at Twin Peaks watching the fight and stuff. And people are all coming up to me. Hey, man, Nate Diaz, all right, dude. You know, people were all chatting up, talking that night. Well, I quit drinking in 2011. But five different times between 2011, from 2011 to now, that was the last one, but last of five, but five times, special occasions, since 2011, I have got shit hammered drunk. And that was the last time I did. I got shit hammered drunk that night, because they were having drink specials, and they were really good, and my buddy was fine. You know, all kinds of drinks and shit. And so, we were having a good time, you know. It was a great night. It was a fun night. It was the most fun night I'd had out in years up to that point. Because even before COVID, I was never going out much. So, I finally got to have a night out So I did it up. I got fucking shit hammered that night. Oh yeah. I was drinking with two hands that night. Fucking. And then the next day, when I woke up, I felt like I had a upper respiratory infection, which I'd had before in my life, so I knew what they felt like. So I was like, oh, gross. I know what this is. It's an upper respiratory infection. Well, I, you know, got the usual over-the-counter stuff that I would take anytime I had that, and it wouldn't go away. And then I got to the point where I couldn't sleep. Like, at all. And I didn't sleep for like 3 months. And I was taking these Somnex over-the-counter sleep aids, which I had heard a long time ago weren't good for you, but everybody says, oh, they're fine, they're over-the-counter. They wouldn't be over-the-counter if they weren't safe. Wrong. That's absolutely wrong. Tylenol's over-the-counter. It can kill you fucking quicker than anything. I should know. So I was, like, sleeping upright, trying to sleep upright, sitting on my couch and stuff. And then I just, this upper respiratory infection I got in March lasted until, like, June. It wouldn't go away. Finally, after I had this upper respiratory infection for, like, 3 months, I started telling people, because at that time, no one, there wasn't vaccines or even treatment or anything they knew yet. It wasn't even calling it COVID yet. They were still calling it coronavirus. People forget, they didn't know anything in March 2020 yet. In March, April, May 2020, there wasn't much known. Then, like, I heard about people using vitamin D and zinc to fight coronavirus. So I got some vitamin D and zinc, and I loaded up on it, took a shit ton of it, and it went away. I had had this upper respiratory infection for 3 months, and it finally went away. I didn't know at the time it's what later would become known as long COVID. That's what I had. I didn't know that. It was new. So then the upper respiratory infection went away, and then I started getting these lesions all over my lower legs, and I was having edema. I was swelling up. My back was swelled up, my legs were swelled up, and I had these lesions on my legs, and they were leaking water. I was sitting at my desk one night, and there was a pool of water on the floor underneath my feet. I was like, what the fuck, where's this water coming from? I had no idea it was coming out of me. It was leaking out of the sores in my legs. And, you know, I started researching it, and I just, you know, was trying my usual stuff that I do, home remedies, supplements, stuff like that. It went away for like a week, and then it came back again. And when it came back again, it was even worse. More sores, more lesions, more swelling. And then, and I'm not saying this is a joke, I'm saying this is because it actually happened. My scrotum, my nutsack, swelled to the size of a cantaloupe. And I'm not even kidding. I'm not exaggerating. And I went, okay, time to go to the hospital. I mean, it sounds funny, but, you know, sometimes us guys, we don't take anything seriously until it affects our junk. And then when your junk gets in, you're like, all right, fuck this shit. I got to go out there. What's up with this? My nutsack, I couldn't even walk. It was chafing my legs. It was so swollen. I'm telling you. It was like, it wasn't good. People think, oh, cool, your nuts are huge. No, not my nuts. My nut sack. It was chafing my legs. I had to put lotion in between because the chafing was so bad. And I had to put on these, like, huge, like, sweatpants that were too big. They had the drawstring out of them. Because it's the only thing I could wear because my nutsack was... I mean, I walked into that emergency room at Parkland Hospital here in Dallas, bow-legged, water leaking everywhere out of me, and my nutsack swollen to the size of a fucking cantaloupe. And they just, they took one look at me and said, okay, we're admitting you right now. If I'd waited another day, maybe a day or two, they said, I'd have been dead. So they diagnosed me with heart failure. And here's what's weird. I told them I thought I had coronavirus. They had just got the first test, and they tested me. I didn't test positive. It wasn't an antibody test or anything. It was just whatever the earliest coronavirus, not even COVID yet, coronavirus test was. They tested me. When they admitted me, I wasn't positive. And I was like, I think I had it. And they were like, yeah, you probably did. And I said, well, I had a upper respiratory infection that lasted almost 4 months. They just kept wanting to blame it all on me not being healthy. Nothing I would tell them they would listen to. I go, well, you know, I think it's these Somnix. These Somnix pills. I haven't been sleeping. I've been taking these Somnix pills, and I'll take, you know, one or two and not sleep, and then I'll take 12 hours later, I'll take two more. I think it's just been building up, and I think the Somnix is what caused the heart failure. They didn't want to hear it. It totally was. They didn't want to hear it, and they didn't want to hear anything because it's weird because later, if somebody died in a car wreck and they were testing them for COVID, they wouldn't put the cause of death was decapitation in a car wreck. They'd put the cause of death was COVID. But it was different when I was in there. They were trying to not blame anything. Anything that was getting blamed on coronavirus, they were trying to downplay it. People forget that or don't even know that because it changed so rapidly after that where they were trying to blame everything on it. And everything because that was by that time they had the vaccines and stuff ready. So then it became about blaming anything and everything on COVID. But when I had whatever I had, coronavirus, I think I had the first strain of it. They were doing anything they could to downplay the fact that what you had was that. I'm telling you, people either don't know that or don't remember that, but it's a fact it happened. So I got diagnosed with heart failure. They put me on, diuretics and stuff, like medical grade diuretics. And got the swelling down and stuff. After a week, I was able to go home and I never have touched one of those Somnix sleeping pills again. I never will again. And how my health improved in the hospital when I wasn't on those things tells me 100% that's what it was. It was those things. Don't ever take those things, folks. Unisom, Somnix, don't ever take that shit. Get some high milligram dosage. If you have trouble sleep, get some high milligram dosage. You should be taking it anyway, just for heart health. Magnesium, and take two of those before you go to bed. If you have trouble sleeping, it really helps you sleep. It's how I weaned myself off the Somnix and stuff. But also didn't know that it's also essential for your blood pressure and heart health and stuff. So since I take two magnesium and a niacin before bed, non-flushing niacin, and I feel great now. But while I was in there, when all that shit was going on, that's when all the Great Reset Klaus Schwab stuff came out. I didn't know about it. I just thought it was funny that some of the most important, crazy, fucking wild information ever, something new that I could jump all over, because it just doesn't happen all the time that something new like that comes out. It comes out while I was down for the count and fighting for my life. I don't know. There was gotta admit, there's a part of me, a conspiratorial part of me going, really? For the first and only time since I've been doing this, something huge and new comes out that I just have to be down for the count and unable to cover, and I missed it. So then I had to double back later and research it. I gotta tell you guys. And listen, you can quote me on this, you can put it on a shirt, you can clip it and put it on YouTube, whatever you want to do. I'm going to say this right now because it's the truth. Klaus Schwab is a scarier German than Hitler. I don't care what Jew that pisses off. I don't care who it pisses off. Facts. Listen, guys. If Hitler had said the things prior to the end of World War II that Klaus Schwab has said, Germany wouldn't even be there today. We would have nuked Germany. This motherfucker is scarier than Hitler, guys. I'm telling you. You have no idea unless you know about Klaus Schwab. And you can find out. I've got all the intimate shit of him saying all the crazy shit in the new film, The Great Reset, which is out now in my download store. Please get a copy. It's 2 hours, 20 minutes. Listen, guys, we're in it right now. If you want to know what's going on with the economy, why all this economic stuff and all, people all over, not just in the United States, people all over the world are having problems, and why the inflation is out of control and all, cost of living and all this stuff, it's a great reset. We're living in the middle of it right now, guys. Because these crazy environmental whack nuts believe that lowering consumption of everything is the only way to save us from climate change. So they think if they jack prices up to the point where nobody can afford anything, that will in turn lead to benefits for the cooling of the planet. It's whack nut. In the future, you will own nothing, and you will be happy. I mean, this, you know, this fucking crowd really said this shit. In the future, you will own nothing and you will be happy. In the future, if you want to buy something, you will not own anything. You will simply rent it, and a drone will deliver it to you. So he's saying that you won't own in the future. And by 2030, we won't own anything. If I want a new synthesizer for, you know, making soundtracks for my films, I won't, you know, save up the money for a year to buy a new one like I would have to now. No, I'll just simply rent it from Amazon. A drone will bring the new synthesizer to me, and then I'll return it, and it'll go back, and somebody else will get it after I'm done with it, because we're not going to own anything. You own nothing, and you will be happy. And you won't eat meat very much anymore. You'll eat meat every now and again for a special treat. It's, the whole thing is just, it's just socialism under the guise of environmentalism. And this guy Klaus Schwab of the World Economic Forum, based in Switzerland, by the way, yeah, nice, you don't think that's by accident. See, if this guy was in Germany, somebody would have nuked this motherfucker already. Because this guy, I'm telling you, this guy's crazier and scarier than fucking Hitler was. I'm telling you, if Hitler said the shit that Klaus Schwab has said, people would still be talking about the fact that Hitler said that shit even back then, from back then. I'm telling you. This guy, Klaus Schwab, gotta go. The problem that I can't put together is I can't put together who he works for, because he seems to just be a front man for the whole system. You know what I mean? So you can't really blame Germany or blame any one country. It's just this guy or any, you know, the World Economic Forum is his creation, and this whole thing is about resetting how we, I didn't include this in the film. I just wanted you to come to the conclusion yourself. But if you watch this film, you will come to the conclusion that, oh, that's what COVID was. Because the Great Reset thing was launched during COVID, and it's closely related to COVID. The whole idea of it is closely related to COVID, and that's when you go, oh. So COVID was just how they were kicking this thing off. because it exposed so many problems with the system as far as, you know, supply chain issues and medical care and all that stuff. They devised this idea of the Great Reset to reset the system so that it's equal to everyone. To me, it just sounds like they're trying to say they want this, you know. They don't say it, but it sounds to me, when I interpret and I hear the information, it sounds like, oh, this is just more stuff they're trying to do for, you know, trans people or whatever people. Yeah, it's fucking wacky. You got to see this movie, man. It's 2 hours, 20 minutes long. It's called The Great Reset. I got all the stuff, Klaus Schwab saying all the wild shit in there. But all their own, their official videos that they've released on this stuff. We're in it, guys. They're doing all this stuff. They did all this stuff with COVID. They're doing all this stuff now with the inflation and all this stuff. It's all designed because they believe that's what has to happen to save us from global warming, even though they've already admitted that since we've been cutting carbon emissions, we've been heating the planet, not cooling it, because the emissions were actually cooling the planet. I put the video up on here on Rumble. That's admitted to. So as we continue to cut emissions and do all these things that all the environmentalists are telling us we need to do, more electric cars, all this, guess what? It's making the planet hotter to do that, and that's what they want. They know it. They've admitted to it. It was in the news. Cutting carbon emissions is heating the planet. We were cooling it before. So the more the environmentalists get their way, the more these green plans get implemented, the hotter the planet is going to continue to get, and the more that they're going to feel they're justified to implement more of this stuff. And all of it, all it's really about is consolidating more wealth into the upper, you know, the rich get richer, the poor get poorer, middle class. To, you know, transfer wealth from the middle class. That's what it is. And this Great Reset thing is the catalyst for it. It's how they're doing it. We're living in it right now, guys. I mean, I have listeners in every part of the world, and every person in every part of the world is being affected by this now. And it's not just whoever you're afraid of. I thought it was Biden and just Biden's policies affecting all the countries, and, you know, part of that is partly true, but the Great Reset is really responsible for what we're having going on, and the COVID-19 pandemic was the catalyst for them to be able to do this. That's what you kept hearing them talk about. Oh, during the carbon emissions and were so low, and the planet actually cooled during the COVID lockdowns, because not as many people were driving to work and going to work and stuff. So as soon as they saw that, it was like, that was it. That was game over. And that's when they came up with the whole Great Reset thing. Klaus Schwab talked about it in June 2020. And like I said, I was down for the count during that time. I didn't even find out about it until later because I couldn't even sit at my desk for months. I couldn't do it. I was on mandatory no work for like the first, I don't know, month, 3 months after I got out of the hospital. So, yeah. But again, you got to see this film, guys. Just everybody go to the download store. Buy at least one, download two if you can, more if you can, whatever. Donate if you can. Dayglow76@yahoo.com on PayPal. Reeves Radio, all lowercase, one word, Reeves Radio on Cash App. And capital J, Josh, dash, capital R, Reeves, dash, 6-1 on Venmo. Need your support, guys. Because Tony is The only person we got support from this month, really. Well, one other person, one, a couple other people, small, tiny things, nothing significant. But my point is, Tony's the champion and the fucking greatest support I've ever had. But I already had this film in mind, and I'd already started writing. I was like, you know what I'm going to do? I'm going to make this thing. I'm not going to talk about it. I'm not going to put it down. I'm going to wait. And if the shit gets real bad, then I'll have something I can drop, you know, to try and get some more funds going so I can eat. So that's where I'm at right now, guys, because, you know, I'm on zero. Three Josh watches. Three films. And the Bill Cooper Mystery Babylon Part 1. That's seven things I've put out already in the first 11 days of August. And with that said, that's going to be the last. This is a great reason to be the last movie I put out for a bit. Not ever. No, I got more stuff coming, but for a bit. I put out three already in August, so I wouldn't look for anything else new until at least next month. You know what I'm saying? I need y'all to buy what I've already made first before I can make anything else. So, please do so, alright? Yeah, this is going to be a long one tonight, folks, so strap and get ready for this. But, let's move on to the questions part of the show. This first one is from Tony. Tony says, hey, Josh, have you heard about or listened to any backwards speech analysis? And what is your opinion on the subject? David Oates seems to be the pioneer with this idea that your subconscious speaks truths while listening to someone's speech backwards. Thank you. I did once. I haven't in a while, but I did once, look extensively into that and David Oates stuff. Yeah. Oh, yeah, I did, actually. And for a long time at first, I was I'm sorry, guys. The air quality's shit in Dallas right now because it's like Saharan dust cloud come over. It's horrible. So I've been like, ugh. Coughing shit. I was about 50-50 on it for a while, Tony. Until I really did investigate looking for my own. I gotta be honest with you, man. I actually do think it's mostly bullshit. I think it is like people that see the image of Elvis or Jesus in a piece of toast, you know, faces in clouds. I think it is kind of that kind of thing. And I'll tell you why I came to that conclusion, because I was 50-50 at first. Well, number one, the subconscious does not work like that. To quote Tony Soprano, I know he's a fictional character, but still, I like to quote him. To quote Tony Soprano, I know too much about the subconscious now. The subconscious doesn't work like that. To even insinuate the subconscious would work like that is, to me, a fraud. The main thing is, this whole thing didn't exist before the digital era. Meaning that if it was a real thing, it would have already been found before all of his work, all the stuff he's done on computers and in digital stuff. There's just so much manipulation that can be done. I don't think any of it's true. The thing about it is that for years, I mean, even the Beatles were experimenting with tape loops and backward stuff, and you know, people were even in the reel-to-reel analog days, people were recording and playing back music backwards for decades. None of it was ever found during those times. Meaning, I think if there was something to it, people would have discovered this backwards message thing in the analog tape days when people were playing music backwards more even then. Just everything I know about audio engineering and everything like that tells me, you know, I don't think it's something to it. I just don't even, you know. Hey, if I'm wrong, I'll be the first to admit it. But just from my own personal research, and, you know, that's what you asked me here, my own looking into it, Tony. And I'm not begrudging you or anyone else if you think it's true. I have to say that sometimes because people sometimes confuse me giving my opinion for something I'm asked about with absolute truth or absolute facts. And sometimes it's not always, you know, that. So I'm just, you know, I'm just giving you my professional opinion, personal opinion from my years of research, actually even looking into this subject specifically. I think that it's pseudoscience. I think it's like, you know, one of those things. I just think it's pseudoscience. I think it's kookery, kook science. What they used to call it? Quack medicine. They used to have all these different quack medical devices that they used to use and sell that you could buy. I think it's like that. I think it's like quack medicine. I mean, if you listen to speech that's recorded and you play it backwards, most of the time it just sounds like, I remember when I was a kid, the backward masking thing was all the rage, and everyone was talking about that. I mean, I remember as a kid, I bought Motley Crue, Shout at the Devil on cassette when I was like, I don't know, 8 or 9. I was a little kid. And I'll never forget, it freaked me out and weaked me out, and I was scared to listen to it because it had a little bit of text on the cassette sleeve that said, "Warning, may contain backwards masking." And I'll never forget, man, I was fucking scared. I was like, oh, this album's called Shout at the Devil, and it says may contain backwards masking. Oh, shit. Like, I'm going to get possessed by fucking Satan if I listen to this shit. Goddamn, fire this shit up right now. And, of course, it's just Motley Crue. And I didn't hear anything. I didn't hear any talking in tongues or anything. And I'd already heard shit on, you know, even like the Beatles and stuff. Number nine. And I'd heard ELO, Fire on High. Listen to ELO, Fire on High. At the beginning, you'll hear, and then you play it backwards. And I did that as a kid. I put it on the turntable and played it backwards. And I heard the voice. You hear this, like, voice with all this reverb and echo. I know now it's the voice of Beverly Bevan, Bevan, the drummer of ELO. And the voice says, "Turn back." We do it like it does if it's an echo on it. Turn back. Music is reversible, but time is not. I thought it was cool, but it was a jab. It was a fun little jab at the backward masking thing that was going on at that time. Music is reversible, but time is not. Meaning, don't waste your time trying to listen to shit backwards because, you know, music is reversible, yes, but time isn't. You know, you can't get the time back you spent staring at looking for faces in the clouds, you know. So I remember that. And I remember the rumor going around when I was a kid was the song "Another One Bites the Dust" by Queen. There's like the middle part of that song. And supposedly Freddie Mercury says something. He says something in the middle of there that supposedly they said if you played backwards, it's Freddie Mercury saying, "I like to smoke marijuana." And that was a big rumor. Like, what? I remember going, what the fuck are y'all talking about? Like, so what if he does? And even if he did, why would he, like, go through the trouble of having him do something in a song you could only hear backwards? And of all things, why would, you know, you'd think it'd be something like, hey, you know, suck a guy's dick or something, you know? You come from Freddie Mercury, not, "I like to smoke marijuana." That's the best y'all got? It's by the dust. By the dot day. You can't hear what he's saying. He says something unintelligible you don't understand. It's in the middle of the song. By the dust. By the dot day. And something. Supposedly that, whatever he says in the, you can't really tell what he's saying. Supposedly whatever he's saying when he plays backwards says, "I like to smoke marijuana." Yeah, I mean, and then the Judas Priest thing, "Better by you, better than me." That's one of the first songs I learned how to play on guitar, along with Electric Funeral by Black Sabbath. Which was a cover. That wasn't even Judas Priest's song. That was a cover they did. "Better by you, better than me." And these two dudes blew their heads off with shotguns, and then the family tried to claim that, oh, there was backward messages that made these two kids commit suicide, because you hear Rob Halford going, "Do it, do it, do it, do it, do it." "Better by You, Better Than Me" wasn't even Judas Priest's song, but the song was about, you know, "Better by you," meaning better you kill yourself than me kill you. But there was a whole thing. I mean, Judas Priest had to go to court over that. I mean, people believed it. People were really buying into it. That who was it that had that, John? I think it was. I can't remember if it was Bill Hicks or Dennis Leary, because Dennis Leary ripped so much stuff off of Bill Hicks that sometimes I get confused on who said it. I think it was Bill Hicks. I think Dennis Leary may have repeated it. He's like, let me get this straight. Judas Priest fans are buying albums, taking them home, listening to them, and then killing themselves? Where's the problem? But, no, I mean, you know, that was all part of the satanic panic stuff and all that. But it was a thing, man. I mean, it was a thing that people were actually believing that bands were actively trying to get people to do things with subliminal messages in their music and stuff. But it's crazy when you look at it, because really the Beatles were the first. They were the first ones doing it. And this is after the fake Paul McCartney came into the mix. Because the original one wouldn't go along with the Tavistock MK Ultra stuff, and so they you know, he had to be replaced with somebody that would. You gotta see my film, follow the movie. If you haven't. So yeah, Tony, I, you know, just from my knowledge of audio engineering and everything, I. You know, the subconscious just doesn't work like that. It doesn't work in a way where there would be perceivable things in speech patterns that would be reversed. Because why would it only work if you listen to stuff played back digitally? You know what I mean? Somebody would have discovered it way before then. So there you go, man. Well, last week, Calvin asked about Andy Summers. You know, I want to say this. I reserve the right on this show to go back and add stuff later to questions I've already been asked. Because sometimes I think of stuff later, so you might get that a lot on this show. You will get that a lot on this show. You'd ask me about his effects and stuff, and after I heard the playback, I was reminded, oh, I didn't even mention the Echoplex. You're asking me about his effects and stuff. Well, that was a big part of the Andy Summers sound in the beginning. The Echoplex was a pre-analog chip, pre-digital. It was a tape-based delay device. It had an actual piece of tape in it. I had a Roland Space Chorus one time. I sold it, but it was one of those. It had actual tape inside of it. It's a tape delay. Brian May used it. Jimmy Page used it. Andy Summers used it. Tons of people. Brian May was probably the most innovative with it because what Brian May did was something different than anybody else did or has ever done. Where he had multiple Echoplexes on different settings, and then he had each signal going to a different amplifier. So he'd get this big, you know, choral effects with his guitar, where he'd hit a note and go, dang, 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 and it would bounce out of each dang, would come out of a different amplifier. With the delay, tape delay setting on something different. So he could just sit there and play, you know, listen to Now I'm Here, and the Now I'm Here solo by Brian May. That's the Echoplex and multiple amplifier thing. And he did it, you know, with his solos too, where one, he'd hit a note, and then that note would overlap the other one, then he'd hit another one. He knew how to time it exactly right, you know. Guy's an astrophysicist, for real. Brian May is an astrophysicist. That's why he's Dr. Brian May. And so Andy Summers was using that in the early days, too. What's that song? The police song. Guess this is our last goodbye. Mm-hmm. I won't cry. You'll be sorry when I'm dead. All this guilt will be on your head. I guess you'd call it suicide. But I'm too full to swallow my pride. I can't stand losing. I can't stand losing you. Can't stand losing you. I had to sing it to remember the name of the song. But yeah, I listened to I Can't Stand Losing You by the Police. That's Andy's got the Echoplex all over the place in that one, where he's just hitting a note and letting it ring and then doing like a little grind thing on the guitar and just letting the echo play out. Yeah. Oh, it's amazing. But yeah, that was a huge part. The Echoplex was a huge part of the early Andy Summers sound. And then, you know, he later replaced it with, you know, the newer updated delay devices. But yeah. So this is another one from Calvin. He says, Andy Summers was and is so great at his tone, as you say. Oh, that's what it is, man. It's all about tone. I was hooked as a young man trying to understand what he was doing. Knowing what my father did chord-wise on 6 and 9 string Telecasters. Yeah. I remember you telling me about your dad, man. I looked into him and said, yeah. Yeah, he's a legend. If you can for the next show, The Kinks, a quick review of Give the People What They Want album. At the time of its release, nobody other than true fans knew who we were bumping on the boombox in the park, and they liked it. They were tripping out when we told them, as it sounded nothing like what they were used to, the Kinks from the 60s. Thank you. Okay. Well, because, you know, last week I gave my revised top 10 bands list, and the Kinks were on that revised list. You motherfucker, Calvin. You motherfucker. Damn. It's been a while. It's been a while. It's been, I don't know, over 20 years. Damn. It's been a long time since I've been poser checked. And this motherfucker poser checked me on my own show. Goddamn. Hey, good on you, bro. More power to you. I ain't mad at it. I ain't been poser checked in a while, though, dog. I see you. I see you, dog. I see you. I know, hey, listen. It's all good, bro. I'm right there with you. I see it. I see you. This motherfucker's poser checking me, Alba. He heard me say, and listen, you notice how it, nowhere in that email, nothing that I read to you, nowhere did he say, I'm a hardcore Kings fan. He didn't say that. Those words were not included in what he said. But because I am a hardcore Kings fan, I know that he is. And that's why I know. That's why I know this is a poser check. No, I get it, dog. You got to check these hoes out here some of these days, you know. People be running around posing and shit. No, you don't ever worry about that with me. I'm not a poser, bro. I never have been. But that's a poser check. That's what that is. Because if I had said, oh, give the people what they want, I don't know that album. I've never heard that album. Or I don't like that album, or what, something to that effect. Calvin, being a hardcore Kings fan, would know immediately I'm a poser Kings fan. But since I'm not, here we go. Good one, bro. Good fucking pick, man. Listen, you asked the exact right person about that album. Are you kidding me? Listen, I've been flying the flag for 80s Kinks for 30 years. I've been like the only guy flying the flag for 80s Kinks and 80s Rush. I'm the only guy that's been flying the flag for both, man. For real. Listen, give the people what they want is just as important as any Kinks album that was ever made. It's up there. It's up there with any of their greatest albums. Here's the thing, though. At the time when it came out, if you were somebody who was alive at that time that had been listening to the Kinks from the beginning, you know, from like You Really Got Me and stuff and on through the 60s and with, you know, Village Green Preservation Society and, you know, into the 70s with Lola versus the Power Man and on, Arthur and the decline of the British Empire, all that stuff. It's kind of like going to a restaurant and ordering filet mignon, and then when they bring your food to the table, you get a trout with the head still on it, with its eyes still in, looking at you, and you're like, what the fuck is this shit? This is not what I wanted. This is not what I expected. This is not what I ordered. So a lot of hardcore Kinks fans at that time when that album came out rejected it and didn't like it because it sounded to them like the Kinks were trying to be too modern or trying to be too something that they were not. That just wasn't the case. But then you had other people, like yourself from your story there, who thought the Kinks were a new band. I'm not saying you thought that. I'm just saying a lot of people did. Some people did. Some people, when that album came out, some people thought, oh, this is a new band. But see, on that album, everything's cranked up. The guitar sound is a modern guitar sound, modern sounding distortion. The guitar distortion, the amps are cranked up. The drums are beefed up. But the voices and the singing and the songwriting is still what you would expect from the classic Kinks. It's just got a modern edge to it. I mean, fucking great fucking album, bro. Amazing album. Are you kidding me? Not a bad song on the album, just the way it, from the first song, it kicks out. I think another thing a lot of people didn't like about it was, what was that song, Destroyer? And it was basically just all the day and all the night with different lyrics. And I think that turned some of the old Kinks fans off who thought that they were, you know, turning into something else. But I had, you know, well, before I get to that, listen, this I don't think has been stated enough by, I don't know what you want to call it, music intelligentsia, the, you know, music press, whatever. I don't think this has been stated enough, and it should be stated a lot and be put on the record and be talked about often because it's the truth and it's facts. Well, you know, the Kinks went on. He's had a great run of records. And in the 60s, they went on that run from the first album in 64 right on through the 60s and how music was changing. Listen, I'm going to tell you right now, guys. If the Beatles had never been the Beatles, the band that everybody talks about now, like the Beatles, as like, you know how people talk about the Beatles now, the Kinks would be the band that everybody talks about now, like everybody talks about the Beatles. Yeah. Yeah, it's a fact. In my... I just got to say it. In my opinion, I think they're better than the Beatles. I think they put out more albums. They're around longer. That's kind of unfair, an unfair thing, statement to make, because the Beatles were only around 10 years, and the Kinks were around for, you know, they broke up in like 96, I think. So, first album was 64. But they were putting out albums all through the changing patterns of music in the 60s and 70s. The Kinks or the Village Green Preservation Society was the one for me that I heard like 30 years ago that made me go, start paying attention. I go, oh, these guys are, oh, this is different, you know. But there was a time period in the, after Lola and the Power, Lola versus the Power Man came out in 1970, the one that had Lola and all that on it. The albums that came out with after that, Percy, Muswell Hillbillies, Everybody's in Showbiz, Preservation Act 1, Preservation Act 2, Soap Opera, Schoolboys in Disgrace, Sleepwalker. But during that time, from like 71 to like 77, the Kinks were on the decline. They were. They were on the serious decline. They were close to not being around anymore. They weren't selling albums anymore. Their albums weren't that good anymore. Even though I like all their albums, you know, but I'm just saying for the for most of the population. And then, with one fell swoop, what was that, 77? With one fell swoop, ladies and gentlemen, from Pasadena, California, please welcome Van Halen! Here comes the mighty fucking Van Halen from Pasadena, California with the fucking, you know, cranked up guitars and the cranked up drums, and they're doing the Kinks. You really got me. And it, you know, it was a top 10 hit for them. And then they put out the album Diver Down. And Diver Down had a Kink song in, "Where Have All the Good Times Gone?" Dude, Van Halen, this is, does not get talked about enough. Van Halen single-handedly saved the Kinks. And that's a period in the story, and I won't argue or talk to anybody who tries to argue that with me. This is just not fact. That's not the fact. That is the absolute fact. The royalties from the sales of their albums quadrupled, went through the roof. All of a sudden, the Kinks, their albums started selling again. All of a sudden, they're getting big royalty checks from Van Halen albums. Van Halen becomes the biggest band on planet Earth. And then by 79, Low Budget, I remember that album, the Kinks' Low Budget album. Music was changing again. Heavy metal and stuff was getting popular. Punk was coming on the scene, and new wave was coming on the scene. and all that, like I talked about last week with Rush. Oh, I forgot to mention, I didn't finish the thought I had last week on the Rush thing. I was talking about how a lot of people consider the Rush 80s stuff the synthesizer period. Well, Rush doesn't call it that, never considered that. They consider that their new wave period. And once I learned that, I went, oh, it all makes sense now. It wasn't the synthesizer, it was the new wave era. That's why in 1987 on the Hold Your Fire album, Rush had Amy Mann from the band Till Tuesday. Remember Till Tuesday? Hush, hush, keep it down now, voices carry. Remember that song? I loved that song when I was a kid in the 80s. Well, they were doing the song Time Stand Still. And they were like, you know, it'd be great to have Amy Mann come in and sing that, just that one little part, Time Stand Still, and maybe some other little things. And so they got in contact, and Amy Mann was like, what the fuck are you talking about? Why would you, in a million years, want me to sing on this? You have Geddy fucking Lee singing in your band. Geddy can do all those falsettos and stuff. Get the fuck out of here. There's no way I'm going to come in and do something that Geddy fucking Lee could do better than I. And they're like, no, you don't understand. You understand, we it's not about that. We know he can do it. We just want you. We want your voice on that song, because it was a part of their new wave thing, because, you know, Till Tuesday was a new wave band. So once they explained it to her, she's like, oh, okay. And then she came in, she did it, and it's fucking amazing. And I remember the first time I saw Rush do that song live, and they had her part, her voice on a sampler. And they would just trigger it. One of the band guys would trigger it. Geddy would trigger it with a foot pedal, or Neil would trigger it with a drum thing or something. And that Time Stands Still, that part of her singing would come in while they were doing it live. And it sounded like she was on stage with them, but she wasn't. And so, the Kinks, I mean, I've been flying the flag for 80s. The Kinks started incorporating more modern sounds into the framework of what the Kinks were at that time. And Van Halen was also a big influence on that. I'm telling you guys, we wouldn't have got all those 80s albums, like Give the People What They Want or any of that stuff, had it not been for Van Halen and them championing the music of the Kinks and covering their songs and making new hits out of their old songs. And it influenced the Kinks to go, listen to fucking that album he's talking about, Give the People What They Want, Marshalls. And they're probably using, like, you know, Vox or Fenders, which I'm a Vox guy. But on that album, the guitars are cranked up to 12. Listen to that distortion sound. They're like using Marshalls and beefed up sounding drums and things like that. That was a direct result of the guitar sound. They heard what Van Halen did with You Really Got Me. You know, because you got to remember when You Really Got Me came out, that that was like the birth of like punk and grunge and hard rock and all of that. And Van Halen was taking that music to create an even newer, beefed up version of rock. And so the Kinks saw that. Now, a lot of bands wouldn't have liked that when Van Halen did that. The Kinks were savvy enough and smart enough to recognize how innovative and great it was and what Eddie Van Halen was doing. And they, instead of being pissed off and mad about it and just collecting royalty checks from it, they instead used it as fuel and used it as influence. And then they came out with Give the People What They Want in 81. And the guitar sound, listen to that, from the first fucking song. From the first fucking song, the guitar, the first thing you notice, and Give the People What They Want, is the guitar sound is cranked up. And you hear that immediately. And that was the Van Halen influence. Van Halen had the cranked up Marshalls and the cranked up, you know, distortion. They were like, hey, what would it sound like? They're just taking what we've done and cranking up the distortion and cranking up the drums on it, creating this thing, this Van Halen sound. What if we took the Van Halen sound and applied that to the Kinks? Well, the Kinks framework is what we already do, and that's what you get with give the people what they want. And holy shit. I mean, talk about the reinvention that the Kinks did in the 80s is one of the greatest reinventions ever in the history of music. I mean, it really is. Because, like I said, those guys could have just said, you know what, fuck it, we're old fuddy-duddies, we're not going to change. Look, we've been in this band since the early 60s. We put out our first album in 1964 when those Van Halen guys were still in fucking grade school. You know, let's fucking, you know, we're not interested in changing with the times. They could have easily done that. And they could have rested on their laurels and collected those Van Halen royalty checks and just, you know, went on with it. But they didn't. Instead, they used it as fuel. And they said, okay, well, let's just turn it around. Let's turn it back on. They're using the Kinks sound as a springboard for what they are doing in Van Halen, so let's use Van Halen as a springboard for what the Kinks are doing now. And their 80s output, and that album particularly, Give the People What They Want, was the result of that. You know, I like a lot of the 80s Kinks, the live Kinks albums as well. All those 80s Kinks albums are great. One for the Road. They had one called Live the Road. That was the one I really liked. Because it had which one was the had the... Oh, no, that was the one. That was To the Bone, I think. The one that had the live... Because To the Bone was like the, I think that was the next to last, I think it was their last album. But To the Bone was like, it was like a studio album that was recorded live. Like they recorded it in a studio, but they had like a crowd in there. And they had reworked one of their old songs on that and made the definitive version of the old version. Just can't even hold a candle to the Bone. I don't want to live my life like everybody else. I don't want to be destroyed like everybody else, because I'm not like everybody else. Yeah, they even use that in The Sopranos. But, and State of Confusion was after Give the People What They Want. I never saw the Kinks. They broke up. They weren't coming to Dallas in those days. But I saw can't remember which one of them it was. I think it was Ray Davies. It was Ray Davies. I saw Ray Davies solo acoustic one time. That was the closest I got, but it was close enough because it was fucking awesome. You know, I heard not too long ago, the Kinks were talking about getting back together for one last tour, I don't know, I mean, those guys are fucking old now, so who knows, the Davies brothers are like the Gallagher brothers, who knows, that was another band that should have been in my top 10 list, Oasis. Should have 100% been in there. But those guys are kind of like the Gallagher brothers. They can't keep it together and not kill each other long enough to go on the road. But, Give the People What They Want. It's just so damn good. And I had a similar thing that you described there happen to me. And another one that didn't happen to me happened to my cousin, but... So in the 80s, a lot of bands that were around in the 70s and even before, like the Kinks, they were reinventing their sound to fit in with the modern times and to be able to keep selling records. Heart. I remember my cousin saying, oh, have you heard this new band? Seen this video? What About Love? You heard this new band, Heart? And I was a little kid. I was like, you know, this is the early 80s. I was a little kid. But I even knew even then because I had heard stories from my dad talking about him and my stepmom going to see in like, you know, 79 or something, Heart with this opening band he used to always tell me about called Zorro and the Blue Footballs. And I was like, that's the wackiest thing I've ever heard. So my dad used to tell me about going to see that he went to saw Heart, you know, in the late 70s. So I knew they weren't a new band. My cousin, like, thought they were a new band because, you know, their songs were on the radio. They were all over MTV. I forget that there's a songwriter. It wasn't Desmond Child, was it? I can't remember who it was. Anyway, whoever it was, the person was that engineered the whole revamping apart, that same person did the same thing with Kiss in the 80s, and Kiss became a hair metal band in the 80s. Oh, yeah. Kiss became a hair metal. Animalize, Lick It Up, all those albums in the 80s were Hot in the Shade. Yeah, they became, Ace Frehley left the band, they got Bruce Kulick and, yeah, they revamped their image and their stuff. Took the makeup off in 83 and they went, you know, they became a hair metal band for most of the 80s. And then in 92, they came out, they got rid of the hair metal look and they came out with an album called Revenge. And, you know, listen, the Kiss was very influenced by the Kinks, especially Gene Simmons. A lot of his vocals are very Kinks influenced. Thought about a baby, I didn't know what to say. I mean, it's very like Ray Davies, you know. And so they came out with this album, Revenge. If that was right when Nirvana Nevermind came out around 92, so grunge and alternative were exploding and hard rock stuff was kind of diminishing and. So Kiss had booked an arena tour for their new album, Revenge, which I loved. I love that album, Revenge. I think it's one of the best Kiss albums there is because it's just pure back-to-basics hard rock, even harder than some of their 70s stuff. You know, it's real, no gimmick stuff. It's real, you know, hard, hard rock shit. But in a lot of markets, their arena tour just wasn't selling. It was going to be an unmitigated disaster. So instead, what Kiss did was they instead decided to scrap the idea of play, so they only played the arenas in certain markets where the tickets were selling. And then they decided, okay, you know, what we're going to do is we're going to book the shows in rock clubs because they just couldn't sell tickets at that time in the arenas. So they booked the Dallas appearance at a club called the Dallas City Limits, where I had already seen Pantera when they were on their come up before they even had a record deal. I was going to see them at Dallas City Limits with a fake ID when I was 15, you know. And but they knew who I. But then I got busted and I couldn't go anymore. And then Kiss got booked to play the show, so I couldn't go. So I had to get my dad to take me. And it's so funny. I were talking about this with my dad the last Christmas we ever had together before he passed away. My dad went to his grave never even knowing that he saw Kiss. He never believed me. Because I was like, hey, Dad, I need you to take me to this show. I can't get in by myself because it's at a club and it's a bar. But if you go with me, I can get in. And he's like, well, who is it? I was like, it's Kiss. He's like, Kiss? He's like, Kiss is playing at a club? And I was like, yeah, I explained to him, you know, they weren't selling Viva La Town. He's like, yeah, okay. So he's like, how much is it? I was like, well, I got the ticket, so I just need you to go with me and take me. He's like, okay. So the day comes, we go, and my dad just goes to the bar, and he's drinking, you know, Jim Beam, Budweiser, you know, he just hit the bar. I'm like 16. It was before I got my driver's license that year, but it was before I got my license. I couldn't go by myself. I couldn't drive. Yeah, remember, this is revenge era Kiss. This is in a club. There's no pyrotechnics. There's no, you know, Gene flying around on cables. There's no fire. There's no big, huge light-up sign in the back that says Kiss on it. There's none of that. It's just bare bones, stripped-down version of Kiss. Where they were wearing leather. And so, you know, show goes on. I'm down in the pit. My dad's just drinking at the bar. And the show's over, and I go back to the bar. I'm like, okay, you ready to go? My dad's like, is that it? He's like, where's Kiss? The Kiss didn't show up? I was like, Dad, that was Kiss. He's like, that wasn't Kiss, man. Kiss came out back in my day when I was in high school and stuff. And my brother had their albums. They had the crazy makeup and all that stuff. I used to see them on TV. So what did you do? And my dad, I'm not kidding you, my dad thought that I duped him into getting him to take me to see, like, some heavy metal band or some local band or something. He took, the day he died, never knew he saw Kiss. He never believed me. A whole way home, he said, man, why'd you do me like that, man? You just told me you want me to take you to see his band. You didn't have to lie and make up this story. Like, Kiss, like, Dad, that was Kiss. He said, no, that wasn't Kiss, man. They got the makeup and the fire and all. Like, Dad, they took the makeup in 83. That was Kiss, man. Like, he didn't know, you know. He could have asked my dad to name a Kiss song. He wouldn't have known a Kiss song. He could have told you any. So, you know, he had no idea. And there was nothing there. If you didn't know you were going to see Kiss, you would have just thought you were just going to see some nobody band. Because they never said, thank you, good night, we're Kiss, or anything like that. Like, you know, they assumed everybody was there and the place packed out. They knew it was Kiss. My dad didn't. My dad thought I was spoken with him. I remember last Christmas before he passed away, they were having Merry Kissmas on VH1. They were playing all Kiss. And I was out in the garage in his little man cave, like, smoking a cigarette and watching it and stuff. And my dad came out there, and he was like, Kiss. He's like, man, you know, I didn't like them when they were out. But I got to say, man, I think they're a good band. Actually, he's like, I bet they were crazy live. Did you ever see them live? Yeah, Dad, I saw them twice. I saw them on the reunion tour in 96 when they put the makeup back on. And the first time I ever saw them, well, you took me. To the Dallas City Limits, to the club. And he had forgotten. And, I remember that time you were fucking with me. You were fucking lied to me and said that you wanted me to take you to see Kiss, and then it was just some, like, nobody band, local band. He's, yeah, I remember that. Dad, that was Kiss. Ah, it wasn't Kiss, man. He never believed me. This fucking guy saw Kiss live in a club and never believed it. If he thought that I had made him go see Kiss, you would have never heard the end of it. That's all he would have talked about for years. Josh made me go see Kiss with him one time. He would have talked about that shit for years. But because he had no awareness that the band that he took me to see was actually the actual real Kiss, he never believed it. It was fucking hilarious, man. But I had the same thing happen where the bands were revamping their images and stuff in the 80s. Is what I was talking about. Kinks did it, and Heart and Kiss. But also ZZ Top. So MTV came out in 81. We didn't get it in Dallas till 83. And it really didn't start really kicking until like 83, 84, 85, around that area. You know, I remember when Van Halen 1984 came out. Yeah, they were all over MTV. And then so was ZZ Top with Eliminator and stuff. All those videos, you know. I remember seeing the video for that song. TV dinners at like 2 o'clock in the morning one time. It scared the bejesus out of me, and I couldn't sleep. I was like 7 or 8, and my aunt took me to a record store, and she said, "Okay, you can pick out anything you want." And I got ZZ Top Eliminator on cassette. And then like a week later or something, I was going somewhere with my dad and got in the truck. And I said, "Hey, Dad, can I put a tape in?" He said, "Yeah, man, go ahead." So I put the tape in. And, you know, we're driving or whatever. And starts going. He said, "Man, this is pretty good. Who is this?" I went, "Oh, it's this new band. I've been seeing them on MTV all the time. They're called ZZ Top." And my dad starts laughing. "Man, this ain't ZZ Top. ZZ Top's from my day. They're from my era, you know. ZZ Top was putting out, you know, LaGrange and all that when I was in high school, man. What are you talking about?" I was like, "Well, I guess there's two bands called ZZ Top then." He's like, "There can't be two bands called ZZ Top. What are you talking about?" I was like, "Dad, look here." And I handed him the cassette case. It had the sleeve in it, and it said, you know, ZZ Top, Eliminators, Dusty Hill, Frank Beard. He's like, "Holy shit, this is ZZ Top. Damn, they sound different. Wow, this is good." But I knew people that thought, myself included, that ZZ Top were a new band. They weren't. The same thing happened with that album you're talking about, with Give the People What They Want. There were people who got that album when it came out, Calvin, and thought it was a new band because they weren't aware of the older stuff because they weren't playing. There wasn't a classic rock radio in those days that would have been playing old Kiss and stuff. It just wasn't around yet. So, yeah, I definitely lived that just in a different way with a different band, but, I mean, it's just crazy. My dad was like, "What are you talking about?" He started laughing at me. He's like, "What are you talking about? This ain't ZZ Top." Because, you know, Eliminator, they had, you know, new production. They were incorporating synthesizers and sequencers and stuff in the background. You know, even on Legs, you know. You had the guitars, but you had the, you know, arpeggiators and stuff in there. And my dad was like, "Holy shit. They sound different." I said, yeah, they changed their sound, their style, and everything. They're, you know. And then I later found out about the old ZZ Top stuff, LaGrange and all that. Because my history teacher / coach in like 7th or 8th grade, Coach Lake, shout out Coach Lake. Motherfucker looked like Robin Williams, and he had the fucking hairy-ass Popeye forearms. We used to make fun of his ass so much. He used to tell me about how he went and saw in like 1968. It was like the first gig that made them start getting a lot of attention, which eventually led to them getting a record deal. Coach Lake used to tell me about how he walked to a bowling alley here in Dallas one time, like 68, and saw ZZ Top in one of their first big shows open for Jimi Hendrix at a bowling alley. Yeah. Can you fucking imagine that? That's how they became famous, was they, Jimmy saw them open for him in Dallas, and then Jimmy started, you know, telling people, "Hey, man, you guys got to check out these cats from Dallas, man. These guys are fucking from Texas. These guys are fucking killing it, you know. ZZ Top." And then they started to become popular in England and stuff after that. Even people like Phil Lynott from Thin Lizzy was, you know, a fan of Dusty Hill's bass playing and stuff. Yeah, yeah. But ZZ Top was one of those bands that had different periods. And that's how that's what makes them great. I love those bands that had different periods in their music output that was different from what they had done in the earliest days. So, listen, as far as that goes, I mean, the Kinks are just right up there. The way they reinvented themselves in the 80s, to me, it's so incredible. It's just right on par with what Rush did. And so, I mean, incredible. Yeah, yeah. Well, that's it, guys, for episode number 9 of the Reality Report. Again, please buy some downloads from the download store and stuff, and make a donation, whatever you can do so I can eat, all right? Take care, guys. See you next time.